Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, when people think of reproductive rights, they usually think first about abortion rights, but the right to health care and the right to freely conceive, carry, and rear a child are also part of the debate over reproductive rights under the law and what role the government should have in them. And the debate is especially fierce when the criminal justice system is involved, which it is more than you may think. Joining us now is Jean Flavin, Associate Professor of Sociology and Anthropology at Fordham University. She has just written a book called Our Bodies, Our Crimes, The Policing of Women's Reproduction in America, largely about how the criminal justice system's treatment of reproductive rights often jeopardizes women's economic and social livelihoods. Welcome to WNYC, Professor Flavin.
Thank you.
Why did you choose to focus on the criminal justice system's role in reproductive rights? Everybody else talks about abortion.
Well, in part because I'm trained as not only a sociologist, but my specialization is in criminology. And in fact, it was when I was writing my dissertation, which was a study of men and women who were convicted of drug offenders, I realized that the group that was sentenced most severely, even after you took into account their prior record, their offense seriousness, the group that received the harshest punishments was women who had children but did not live with them. And it appeared to me that what was happening is these women were being punished twice, once for the drug offense and once for the crime of being considered a bad mother. And that's just not fair.
You're talking about women who had children taken away from them by the court?
Well, we don't know why they did not live with their kids. It's possible that their kids were in foster care. It's also possible that family members stepped in and said, hey, you know, you're going through a tough time. You know, but the point is that it seemed to be that they were being punished not only for their crime, but also for falling short of our ideals of what it means to be a good woman or a fit mother.
Which isn't necessarily a matter for the criminal justice system.
Bingo. In fact, that's one of the fundamental ideas of this book, is that the criminal justice system, the purpose of it is to enforce the law and to punish crime. But what I try to document in Our Bodies,
and
Our Crimes.
And to protect people.
But what I try to document in this book is the ways in which it's not just enforcing the law, it's enforcing standards of, you know, who we think is a good woman and punishing women when they fall short of that ideal.
Some of the examples you give in your book of state intervention will shock a lot of people, like judges ordering women not to procreate or correctional staff referring women who use illicit drugs to a program that pays women to be sterilized. Under what circumstances would a judge order either of these things?
Well, under unconstitutional circumstances. I mean, the good news is that when judges make these wishes known, you know, a lot of times, too, judges will stop short of actually issuing a no procreation order, but they'll make their wishes known. We've had cases where a judge will say, you know, it's not permitted for me to order you not to procreate, but if I could, I would. Similarly, even a woman's defense attorney may be in on the act. But I think what I've, above and beyond just these cases, I mean, I try to look at a series of examples. So not just the no procreation orders, but also the appalling reproductive health care that's available to a lot of incarcerated women. The challenge of trying to raise kids when you're incarcerated or you're being beaten. Issues of infant abandonment and neonaticide. So, and in addition to all of those reproductive issues, I also want to make the point that, especially as someone who myself does not have children, never been pregnant, mm-hmm. that reproductive justice demands the right not to reproduce. It's about recognizing women as valued members of society, regardless of whether or how we reproduce.
I wonder if anybody listening has ever had contact with a criminal justice system that involved you as a mother, your reproductive rights, anything in the area that our guest, Jean Flavin, is talking about, her new book, Our Bodies, Our Crimes, The Policing of Women's Reproduction in America. She's a Fordham Professor of Sociology and Anthropology. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I'm not sure this is exactly a story of what happened to her, but Tony in St. James, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Jean. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I was curious to know if this is in due, at least in large part, to the religious right wing. that they're working into federal legislation rules that are pushing us further and further from being in charge of the decision-making process.
Or into the criminal justice system. And I know he gave our screener an additional example of the military removing the morning after pill from frontline hospitals. Do you know if that's happening?
Well, actually, to go back to this point about is it the religious right, rather than get into the specifics of that, I would just say it's interesting. We are a society that claims to be all about a culture of life. But when it comes down to it, we find that on time and time again, as I've documented in this book, we don't value the lives of the women who give that life. And so one of the disturbing things, again, that I've tried to identify here, is that at some of the points when a woman would most benefit from support, from compassion, from treatment, some of those very points in the system where she's most vulnerable, we respond with some of the most harsh punishment.
It's one of the main points of your book, I think, that the state shouldn't enforce punitive measures on women for their reproductive choices when they are not given adequate support to make other choices.
Exactly. That we expect, we're holding women accountable for healthy reproductive outcomes without providing them the support that they need to ensure those outcomes. And in fact, we expect women to have, to guarantee the safety and health of their child, when in fact we do not guarantee those women that same safety and health.
But to play devil's advocate, from the point of view of your critics, don't you think, for example, it's reasonable to expect a mother to avoid using illicit drugs while pregnant?
Okay, for starters, just because someone uses illicit drugs, even if she's addicted to them, that does not automatically make her an incompetent or unfit parent. Also, it is not the role of the criminal justice system to be define. It's about the criminal justice system, as I said before, is supposed to be enforcing the law, not enforcing standards of what we think a good mom should be. Moreover, a woman's right to be a parent, a woman's right to her reproductive rights do not disappear when she's locked up, when she's addicted to drugs, when she's being battered. And I think that's a very important point for us to remember.
But on the pregnancy question, if a woman is addicted to crack, and it's determined that so-called crack babies are born with serious medical conditions, isn't that more than a social judgment of bad mothering? Isn't that really inflicting an actual physical harm on the child, which maybe is a matter for the criminal justice system?
Okay, Brian, one of the things I would point out is that so much of the hysteria over crack moms, and we're now saying the so-called meth moms, was based on junk science. The evidence in no way, shape, or form suggests that when a woman uses an illicit drug during her pregnancy, that it will result in irreversible and inevitable harm. So I think we've seen a lot of bad policy, a lot of bad actions done under the name of, you know, looking out for these children, which was based on junk science. The empirical good medical research just does not support that conclusion.
Lucy in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lucy.
Hi. Actually, I in the years from, I would say, 89 on downwards, we had a really epidemic of crack. In other states, like Connecticut or, you know, the mothers would be helped to not be addictive. They kept their babies close watch. New York State decided the babies had to be removed from the mothers. We established a program called Early Family Outreach to see if they could stay with these babies because they just continue having babies and losing the babies to the system. The problem was that they kept saying what you just said, that these babies were being criminally attacked by the mothers and the mothers had no right. There was a doctor, Dr. Chapkin, who really went to bat for the mothers that they had the right to remain with the babies. My job was to help them, to teach them parenting, and find some family member that would take care of the babies until the mothers were clean. Yet, we had no place for these women to go. There were tons of programs for men, but never for females.
So what happened to all those women?
Well, they were able, for the most part, to retain their babies. The pediatric system began picking up the babies to follow them closely, and we kind of made an arrangement with the Department of Justice to follow closely the mothers. The babies would be cared by a family member. In a way, it was like the mothers kind of lost straight custody, but the family didn't lose the baby. Mm-hmm. But it was really a big fight because all they wanted was to take the baby, separate them from these mothers like they were the criminals. Nobody thought about this was they needed help in order to get away from drugs.
And you said this was the 90s. Has this system abated now? Is this over?
Yes, for I think a lot has happened because the reality, they just, I mean, our nursery had like 75 babies. We couldn't even have more deliveries because we were backed up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So little by little, people understood. And as she was saying, there was tons of articles being published about these babies were going to be the doom of society. Mm-hmm. And the reality, here we are 25 years ahead, nothing happened. They go to school, they learn. They do have to be detoxified, but it's not what they were, the doomsday that they were predicting.
Lucy, thank you very much for that call from the front lines.
Yes, you could. I really appreciate you calling in because I think it speaks to the fact that there are people who are dedicated and devoted to providing comprehensive, good quality, humane, compassionate treatment and practical and social support to women who are struggling with addiction. And so I thank you for calling in and making that clear.
Deborah in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I had a question for the guest about a recent law that was passed in Holland, the controversial law, where women who have had multiple children taken away by the government, now they're forced to have a two to three year IUD, so long-term birth control. And I was wondering what the guest thought about that in a country where reproductive health care is widely available and for whatever reason women continue to have many kids and have them taken away by the government.
Are you familiar with that?
To be honest, I am not familiar with that. I can say that we have similarly disturbing laws or policies here in this country. For example, in some states, if a woman is incarcerated, particularly for a period of time over a year, it's often considered a form of abandonment and therefore grounds for the termination of a woman's parental rights. Even though it's involuntary.
Can they ever order a woman on birth control in this country?
That has not been held up by the Constitution. I mean, when it's been challenged in courts, unfortunately, a lot of times during the course of that challenge, the woman is herself then locked up. But no, it isn't constitutional. What we do see is this horrible program called Project Prevention that used to be called CRACK, C-R-A-C-K, where they would pay women. In fact, they are in existence. It is a nonprofit organization where they pay women anywhere between $50 and $100 if they agree to go on some long-term form of birth control. Now, that's, like I said, it's a private endeavor, but what you find is they will pay probation and parole officers and other state actors who for referring women to their program.
So it's coercive in that respect.
Yes, very much so.
We have about 30 seconds left. What would you suggest to be at the top of the list to change about reproductive health care policy to address some of these questions of economic justice?
Anything we can do. I really think that the change is not going to come from just court rulings and changes in the law or even changes in policies. It's going to come from measures that improve women's economic status, our autonomy, our sexual freedom, and our access to health care. I would say child care and access to health care would be my two top recommendations.
And I see that you wrote an op-ed praising President-elect Obama for his convention speech where one of the debates, I guess, where he tied the issue of abortion to equal pay for equal work. And we don't have time to get into that, but I just thought I would note that here at the end. So Jean Flavin from Fordham University has written Our Bodies, Our Crimes, The Policing of Women's Reproduction in America. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, coverage of Governor Patterson's bad news budget address. Stay with us.